bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things, where we talk about things after weird things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what up?
Brian Brushwood.
Yo.
So, gentlemen, this is from Ken Palishok, who has been a regular forever and a fan of the show, or friend of the show. Maybe he's a fan. I don't know. And he has a question about podcasting and going to a Patreon model. Listening to the last episode of After Things really got me thinking about implementing Patreon. I'm a little hesitant because I don't want to turn off fans. Personally, whenever a podcast I enjoy starts pushing Patreon, I feel a tinge of guilt because I can't just support every podcast I listen to. I have a very long commute. I'd happily listen to ads so I wouldn't feel like such a leech. On certain shows, I felt like the non-supporting listener is treated as a sort of second-class fan. Perhaps I'm weird for thinking this way, but I want all my listeners to feel valued. Mr. Rogers is a big hero of mine, and I'm a little worried about what Patreon might do to that atmosphere. Did any of you have similar anxieties before pushing your Patreon accounts? Brian, I couldn't help but notice you've been doing Modern Rogue for a while now, and you're just starting a Patreon. Is that more difficult than just starting the Patreon at the beginning? What made you decide to go that route? Justin, you've got a single Patreon for all of your solo endeavors. Would you recommend that for a solo podcaster? Ken.
Hey, Brian, you want to reenact the first time you brought up Patreon to me?
Yeah. hey, Justin, so there's this thing. It's called Patreon. I think we're going to do it for Cord Killers, you know, because we're starting off. We're not with the network anymore. You know, we weren't making a lot of money with an ad-supported network. You know, we were just paid salary. I got like $100 an episode. But I'm just saying, like, maybe we can make more on Cord Killers. Maybe we could do the same thing for Night Attack, the successor to successor of NSFW.
Actually, this was pre that.
Oh, really?
You brought it up to me while NSFW show was still going on, before there was any hint of any problems, when everything was still rolling. You brought it up to me then, and I said, no, it's going to ruin the atmosphere. We have a small but dedicated audience, and as soon as you introduce money to it, it's gonna make everybody... At best feel bad about themselves if they can't contribute, or they're not contributing as much, or at worst people are going to get really demanding on the content, and so much of our show is based on our relationship with the audience. We can't ruin it, and exactly how much money are we going to get out of it anyway? It's a bad idea, Brian. It's never going to work. Hard and fast, no. Infinity and forever.
and then what was the turning point for you?
We left the network, and we were like, the conversation that, well, you and Tom did it initially, and it did very well with Cord Killers, and Tom did really well with Daily Tech News Show, which is, I'm sure, which brought us to another common thought. We missed the boat.
Yes.
Everybody's got a Patreon now, so no room at the inn for us. Looks like, you know, Tom's got one. You and Tom have one. Scott's got one.
Yep. Nope. And
money's all gone.
Of course, we thought the same thing about Kickstarter, right? We thought like, Kickstarter came and went. Now everyone's going to figure out that the Kickstarter projects are just a money hole that never delivers anything.
I was thinking about starting a podcast, but geez, I mean, everyone's got a podcast now. I mean, Kevin Smith just started one. You know, like,
Pro tip. If you think it's over, but everybody's talking about how big it is, it's starting.
Yeah.
Yes. And so ultimately, I mean, listen, it was a big thing for Brian and I to do the Patreon. And at the point that we actually did it, the roles had kind of reversed. And I was very into the idea of Patreon. And Brian was actually a little bit more hesitant because you just had launched Cord Killers. And the one final thing was us kind of simultaneously coming to the realization that, like, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? We make less than the $250 a week that we were splitting from Twitch. Like, yeah. Other than that, we even if it's a buck more, we get a raise, right?
The budget, the bar was fairly low for us to declare victory on it. And of course, it ended up being not only just a good thing, but a life-changing thing for both of us. All of a sudden, you know, the necessity for us to invest all our time in day jobs really, really transformed. But in both of those instances, those were cases where I know Ken is acting as though you know, we launched with those Patreons, but we really didn't. I always think in terms of things as you plant, you sow, and then you reap. Back to the college days when I was touring, I sowed by sending thousands and thousands of postcards to colleges nationwide and booking entire tours, and then I reaped when I got to do that. Likewise, we sowed goodwill and demonstration of brand value that we were able to show up week after week and do these podcasts for, how many years were we at Twit? 5 years, I guess? And then we got to reap and find out, well, I wonder how much cash there is there, how much goodwill is there. And so we discovered it that way. Whereas you, Justin, with the jury Patreon feed, that was something that you started concurrently with doing more podcasting, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd done the jury show for a little bit, but that was me putting my toe in the water, thinking about quitting my job.
I want to get back to Ken's first question was just the idea of doing it alone. And because his talks about like, he feels like, is he depriving his fans? Cause he feels bad that he can't support some of these things.
Yeah.
And I would say that one, if you're not going to do this thing because there's not going to be a way to support it, then it don't feel bad to do it. Because if it's the difference between this existing and not existing is people supporting it, then that's why it is. Some podcasts make you feel bad because you're not supporting it. We may joke at it, but we love all our listeners. Anybody who listens to us, we're happy to have. We're very, very happy to have. Now, we'll create special content or whatever to incentivize people. But we, you know, we've had these conversations, had a conversation with Justin about a podcast project he's working on about at what point is it okay with the people who supports him to then make that content available to everybody else? Because you want to make it available to everybody. I love digital publishing because I can give my books away whenever I want, you know, and so I don't have to have this, no, you got to buy the book. If you can't afford it, I don't want to deprive you of this experience. So anyhow.
Yeah. You know, I think ultimately don't be afraid to introduce to your audience the idea that some of them can give you money. And one of the guiding principles that I live my life by is a quotation that I will read from Saint Colleen, who told me wisely, give everybody who wants to give you money every avenue to do it and understand that it can be varied, right? And some people like to give you money for the Patreon and they like to have it shouted out every week. I understand that there's other people that, you know, want to support in other ways or can't support at all. And that's fine. You know, I just want to give people the options to do it. Now, I do think that there is something, and I'd love to hear both of you guys chime in on this. The idea that now that we live in a world where Patreon is such a thing, that maybe there is room for a post, this is a thing conversation of, yeah, you want to know what? Let's make sure that we anchor in free listeners rule, but also, as opposed to, here are the people that are making this happen. Thank you, exalted patrons. You know, is there an evolution of that message going forward?
Man, that's a really good question that I'm wrestling with. You know, as we gear up for some kind of Mono Rogue release, and I wish I could. I wish I had an answer that was simple, but I really don't. I'm going to say that there are many different ways. We've seen a bunch of wildly different methods to reach out and solicit memberships. And we've seen the many of them, virtually every way you could think of, we've seen some version of success that comes with that, whether it's per thing released. You know, is this, you know, value for value? You're not getting anything special. You're just paying what you deep in your heart know this is worth. Others are like, you get all the bells and whistles, you're on the inside, you know, and we, you know, even Twitch does a version of that where it's like, you know, do it for the emotes. And I guess also along the way you'll support the show. I wish I had a simple answer, but I really don't.
I think, yeah, you different things, different models. So weird things. This started off just a thing we did for fun, and you know, we figured out, no, we make money from it later on. And we did it years before we actually said, oh, let's do a Patreon to support the thing. I have Magic Club, which is still in its very, very early stages. And that's one where we have the free component, which is Magic Club, which airs on YouTube. And then we have the Secret Session, which is only available through Patreon because it solved two problems. One was if we wanted to bring on really talented magicians to show us some really cool stuff, they don't want it out on public YouTube. They don't want that out in front of everybody, but they would like, yeah, people who have an interest in learning it. So we needed a wall, and a cheap paywall seemed like a very effective way to do that. And so that for that show, that's the model. Half the content, the real content's the Secret Session, but you only get that through the Patreon. And I mean, are there people that would love to have access to that can't afford it? Absolutely. Is there a solution to that? Maybe at some point, you know, we can figure that out. But just the difference between this existing or not existing comes to a paywall and creating that and doing that. So, you know, it depends on what you're trying to do.
So to the bigger question, because I would say to the bigger question about timing, I don't know. I think there are you could frame it however you want. You could say, hey, if you would like to give me money, you can now on Patreon. How much you want to make it all bells and whistles, and here's a fancy wonderland that you'll get an enhanced or superior experience or greater access to me or whatever those things are. Again, that's you got to read your audience to get a feel for what that is. I'll tell you this much. A big part of the Modern Rogue Patreon is going to be that it's clear that there's an actual fan base, and I'll I want very much for Modern Rogue to kind of follow in the footsteps of the greats like Rooster Teeth or whatever. There's an amorphous fan base that probably will never hear about the Diamond Club group that doesn't know about Chat Realm, but they want to be their own thing. They all are rallying around the Modern Rogue, and so part of that is to create a clubhouse. And I know that Patreon wants to be the social media platform for people to talk to the people that they love. They want that to be the one clubhouse where everyone hangs out in.
A clubhouse of rogues.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, as far as a question he had asked about, you know, should you start with, do you start with the Patreon or you wait and add it in later on? I think it's different. It's a different model in Kickstarter where you're asking people to put faith in what you're doing and say, trust me on this. I like Patreon because, like, for Magic Club, we do it per episode. We don't do monthly. We do per episode because sometimes it might be a week or two weeks before the episodes go up. And it just seemed like that's a better way than saying, yeah, give us money every week, and I promise you, you'll get it. This way, you only get charged when, you know, the show goes through. And it depends upon your way to do that. I was happy to launch with a Patreon model because let's build that into the get-go so we know our metric. We have a metric. How many people are supporting us? What are they liking? What do we build from there? It wasn't like, we're going to launch this Patreon and we're going to make money. You know, I explained it to Jordan. I'm like, we got to look at this evolution of this over a year. You know, we got to look at our growth over a year and see where we go, not over the next 6 weeks or 3 months, because we're still going to be figuring things out. But having that from the starting point as our business model made sense with that show, rather than, oh, let's do it for 4 months or 5 months and then say, hey, let's do a Patreon, because, you know, maybe we'd find out like, oh, there's zero support for it, you know, and now we need to adjust, versus here, you know, every time episodes go up, we get new subscribers and we go, okay, we know this is working. And for as tiny little footprint as we have, it's been very effective for getting the ratio of views for people who want to support it has been very high.
So you are a great example, because initially I had always said post Patreon, start your Patreon at the beginning. If you have a new podcast, start your Patreon and then you decide how much you plug it. Right. But you do want to have, if somebody falls in love with you, an ability for them to feel good by supporting you. But I think I've evolved that a little bit. And part of what I think it is what Andrew has said, that, you know, you launched Magic Club because you had your value proposition already baked into it. Mm-hmm. People who are involved in Magic understand the concept of pay the money, here's the secret. That's the way that Magic works. That's every magic business that talks, that does tutorials or anything. Like, anytime that you are getting the full work through, you can almost universally expect to pay. And it's the reason why Brian has such a meticulous wall with Scam School and stuff like that, is that you need stuff that's already been out there to go to run through it, and that's the free tier, effectively. If you have a new podcast, I would say I would still say start it just so you have it. Somebody finds it, you know, it's part of your Twitter or something like that. If somebody really wants to give you money, don't like say no, screw you, I won't take your money. But if you want to hold off on that hard push before you have the value element to it, then I think that that might be a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's figuring out like what's that going to say, hey, we've launched a thing, you can support us. I mean, there's not a, I don't think there's a, you're not, at, I wouldn't do that if you're charging monthly and you may be doing infrequent episodes, because if you'd go a month or, you know, you put up one episode and they pay the same as what they were expecting something weekly, you're going to anger people and you're going to turn people off before you want to.
100%. I mean, yeah. I also just disagree with monthly stuff for podcasts, like in general. I think for like Modern Rogue, it would make sense. I don't know what you guys are doing for that, but like, if you guys are looking to do multiple things a week or something like that, then maybe. But
that's the only hiccup. And to be honest, I'm not where we ended up was doing a monthly thing. But I'm back to reconsidering it because I have no spine. But because I wonder if it could be phrased as per Friday release, where it's like, look, you are paying for the Friday episode. Everything else is just free extra stuff that's made possible thanks to our generous patrons. And then maybe that would be, but one of the weird aspects of
that's what I'm doing with Jury. I mean, you only pay for Jury, like on the Jury Patreon. So you pay for my one mic podcast that comes out on Tuesdays. Politics is free. And then if you want to be at the $3 level, which is for political super fans, you get two other bonus shows that I do that are audio only for the week. But I do it weekly, and it's centered around the idea that a show comes out and that's what you pay for.
It's interesting. I ran into somebody at the Magic Castle last night who had just a couple of days before had supported the Magic Club podcast because he's a Magic fan and he's a fan of weird things. And it was interesting. He says, yes, I haven't started listening to I haven't started listening to Magic Club yet, but I saw you're doing this. So I figured I'd go in and support it. You get a lot of people out there like, I'm like, well, man, like, I can't wait for you to actually dig into it, because I think it's actually really kind of cool. But I'm going to make a point to an argument for launching with a Patreon. You ready? Mm-hmm. And doing episode only. So that way, if it atrophies and dies on the vine, nobody's getting charged. When people go back and discover you from older episodes.
Oh, yeah. And then they realize every single week, like, oh, wait, yeah, I can. To be honest, that's a big part of, you know, the retail side of things with scam stuff. You know, the longer that tail gets, the more episodes where, you know, there's clever stuff that we're showing off that happens to be available at Scam Stuff. You know, the more people discover that back catalog and eventually make it to the website.
So our next, I'm going to move on to another question. This is from James Harrison, our favorite Canadian pickpocket. Hey guys, as a success story, being a full-time magician that can feed his family and have a roof over my head. Hey, brag about it, why don't you? From the After Things think tank, I've been keeping my nose to the grindstone, getting gigs, planting seeds, and taking names. But as I look out on my mass empire, I notice something lacking. I'm having trouble making time for my friends, family, hobbies. You guys have failed to mention how to make me time, not just that time to make a deadline or set up a new project, but to have fun. How do you step away to help your brain refresh without feeling guilty? I notice Brian and Justin playing Hearthstone all the time. Thanks for friending, by the way. How do they do it and not feel like they have to get back to work? How do you make take the time to recharge? Sorry.
Number one, busted. I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone. But I would say almost without question, anytime you see me playing Hearthstone, it's because I'm also doing something else that's already on the schedule. For example, and the answer is you put it on the calendar, whatever it is you need to do. If you are feeling like your connection with your eldest daughter is low, then you put it on the calendar that this time I'm going to go make time to do whatever with my kid. The times I play Hearthstone are either when I'm watching a television show for cord killers, and it's something, and as a result, like I'll keep having to press pause on it as I get distracted. But the bulk of my goofing around is during workouts. I'll do one or two hour long exercise bicycle times, and that's when, to help pass the time, I'll listen to an audiobook and play Hearthstone. Or when you're on an airplane, or when you're at the airport, or whatever. This is all dormant bandwidth that's not being used for anything else, and probably could not be used for this is all just me making excuses for Hearthstone. But I, as far as like to have leisure time, recognize you only have three energy bars instead of health, mana, and stamina. You've got physical health, emotional connections with other people, and money. And so if you recognize that you do not have the emotional connection that you want with someone, or that you are feeling like your mental health is deteriorating, then what you got to do is you got to rebalance those bars, because you can't work yourself like crazy. Although you can, you just burn out of steam a lot faster.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think I have, I've always had a problem with the idea of a work-life balance. And I have the ability to kind of, kind of navigate this in a different way than Brian does. But not as freely as Andrew does, as, you know, I'm in between. I have a wife, but not kids, right? So there is an element of me that needs to tend to somebody else. But also, I spend the majority of my day alone or talking to you fine folks. So I think that part of it for me is understanding what brings me money. Am I focusing on that? Am I getting that done? Am I a good teammate to those that I am on the same team with, and am I continuing to kind of turn that crank? And if I am doing that, then I will allow myself to play Hearthstone when I eat lunch. You know, if I'm not doing that and I'm not at peace with that, then that often, you know, forces me to kind of do more stuff. But I think, you know, I've never really found, when other people talk about a work-life balance, I've never really found a lot of common ground with that, because in general, I want my work to be as pleasurable or as rewarding as possible. And that's not usually the conversation that I wind up having with other people. So I don't know exactly what the best way to unplug is, 'cause I don't really like to unplug, but, I also like to play Hearthstone when I eat.
I'll tell you what, for me, it's all about, you know, live by a calendar, have your obligations out there, have what you know you need to do. And it used to be, when I was on tour, the easiest times were for downtime, you know, places where it was just impossible for me to get anything else done, you know, traveling at the airport, in the hotel right before a gig or right after a gig. Like, those are protected spaces. Like, when my one job is to get rested and get pumped up for this gig and then do the best version of the gig that I can. Absent that, as I spend more time at home, it's become more important for me to schedule out responsibilities. So it's like, instead of leaving a to-do just kind of vaguely amorphous, oftentimes I'll put it on the calendar and say, okay, at 3 o'clock, I'm going to knock this thing out. And then when 3 o'clock comes, it's time to knock it out. Or it's time to intentionally punt it to another time. But in either case, you don't have that heavy weight just sitting on you. For example, the frustrating times, it's almost better now that we're so busy that all of us are so busy, because you don't have that weight of waking up and knowing that what you ought to do is hop on the phone and make miserable phone calls to try to book gigs. And instead, you know, you have everything sketched out. Now, what you can do is just, you know, limit it. Say, I'm going to do 1 hour of cold calling, and however many things I book, that'll be that. And then I'll be done. And then it'll be 1 hour of Hearthstone as my reward. Like, that changes things so that you get through the part you don't like, and you try to make the most out of it, because you see that deadline, you see that end zone coming up, and then at the end of it, you get the reward. So I don't know. I'd say just, you know, call them what they are. These are rewards for yourself. Put them on the calendar. Always put them at the end of some amount of pain. For me, it's working out mostly, because that's something that I've, you know, I don't like going and doing group workout activities because I get bored. Whereas, you know, having that to distract me is a reward that keeps me doing the hard stuff.
I have nothing of value to contribute to this discussion because I would say that I utterly fail at the work-life balance. I would say my life is a product of that failure. So,
For what it's worth, it seems to be working out pretty well between your prodigious output of novels and television hosting duties and lectures and
I still mean, single, no kids, and those are things. At some point, I would, you know, married, have kids. That's the option things I'd like to, but I know that my one of the things that's always been a frustrating thing in relationships is my proclivity towards, I'm going to go dive into this thing and I'm just going to do this sort of thing. And that's certainly making time for others. But I think that relates too, is that, you know, I was up till 5 a.m. because I have a project and I'm like, I'm not going to go to bed until I solve this thing. I'm not going to go to bed until I solve this thing. Hypothetically, you know, I'm not to say this is me, but I could be the kind of person that could be like, let me take the iPad out and look at some adult material, right? In the middle of that, be like, meanwhile, there's this coding thing I'm trying to solve. Let me pull this other window open.
Ha! Ha! Then you get your copy-paste mixed up and you get some very strange code.
Yeah, so.
I will say that everything I learned about, like, productivity and work ethic, I learned from Andrew.
I'm like, apologize for that. I'm very sorry about that.
There's nobody that I have taken more of a cue in my life than to say I want to be in other people's eyes as productive as what I saw out of Andrew. Now, at the same time, I know that that's impossible for me. I can't do that. Andrew is one of the most prolific, productive people on the planet. And yet, and I think we've talked about this on this show, I think that you have been more productive, or at least there has been less of the projects that ran super, super hot and then, didn't pay off in the way that you would have liked, as you have taken more of a step back to understand that, like, you should be around people more. And that was very much coincided to your trip to your moving to LA, where I think you just had a more conducive lifestyle to how you wanted to live.
Yeah, I certainly would say I'm at, you know, probably the most productive period of my life, and I'm also more social than I've ever been. And I would say that, you know, and for me, that's like, yeah, I hung out with people Friday night. You know, that's my metric. I made being in LA made it a lot easier for me to have a social life, because more of the people I knew and I wanted to hang out with were here or happened through here. You know, I had an amazing week last night. Not going to brag. I got to go hiking with Paul Zak and Matt Ridley, you know?
Oh my gosh. I bet that was amazing.
Yeah. Cause it's like, oh, you know, Matt happened to be in town. Paul was there and we're all friends. And so it was one of these kind of cool things. And like, would not have happened in South Florida. And then Friday, and then I go dive back into my work. I go home, I go dive back into my work. And then Friday night I pop up because I got to go to this amazing party where it was like, you know, an LA party where it's this big, huge 4-story mansion overlooking the hills kind of thing. And you're meeting people who are famous and cool and whatever. And I'm like, yeah, this wouldn't happen in South Florida. This wouldn't happen here. And then I just go back into my little hole and go do my little work. And I'm like, okay, I socialized this week.
Yeah.
You know, I went out twice, you know, and now I'm going to go back and work. And so for me, it doesn't have to be the volume of time. It just means the quality of time. And I will make an effort. I'll say, like, I will, like, people talk about Wonder Woman. I'm like, I want to see Wonder Woman. Like, I need to see it in the theater. I'll go see it Sunday afternoon. I know I want to finish this thing. I know I want to get this other thing done. And I get so much joy out of the things I do that other people look at as work. That's the thing. But I'm like, I will go do this and I will stop the working for a little while to go do something like that. You know, somebody mentioned the 3D printing thing. A funny thing that actually led to something, which I'm not at liberty to disclose. But,
oh, that's great.
Yes.
And also, by the way, if we want to start listing the businesses that Andrew has started, man, we got a long list, brother.
And the danger is when they go nowhere and they don't accomplish anything, and then you pick up and you start over on something else. And that's been a pattern I've tried very much to step to not have happen. And I know I've had a thing as recently with my project Tiny Shop where I'm like, I need to learn how to make an iPhone app. And I dove deep into that. And then along the way, I had a really cool idea for an app. I want to do this. But, you know, Tiny Shop, like author page, there are things that I keep open in the background and I do a little bit of here, a little bit of there. Those are in phases where it's like, you know, they're still there. They're still there. There are other things you just sort of go, man, that's not going to happen. And it's not easy. It's not easy because sometimes you got to say, this is the extent of it. Or sometimes you got to say, am I just chasing the new shiny object? And I'm guilty of that. Very guilty. But try to increase my rate of delivery.
That's a valid strategy too, is making a lot of high risk, high reward bets. You know, I think of them as scratch off lottery tickets. When you decide to be a serial entrepreneur, especially one that picks up and sets aside as fast as Andrew has, the good news is that, you know, you vastly increase your chances of suddenly hosting a series in primetime A&E television. But
and like, you know, the 3D printing thing was, like, I was fascinated by this area and it got me back into sort of the building thing sort of phase. And a lot of times I jump in this, was like, I'm going to learn, I'm going to do something. And that led me to a project which at some other point I'll be able to talk about. I work, you know, one day a week with, you know, three other people on a really, really cool project. And that came from this thing led to this other thing. And sometimes you don't know where it'll go. But if it's like, guys, I'm going to pick up something entirely different. My barometer is anything getting done? Is anything getting done? And I've had two books come out this year. Audiobook of Station Breaker is now available, by the way. And, the next book in there is going to be available in a couple weeks. So this song, like, I feel like, okay, my productivity as far as getting things released, I got a new magic trick out. But, so things are getting released.
Let me just point that out. Hold that up again. That is an audiobook version of a ebook that post the first publishing deal. Andrew wrote, said, you want to know what? I'm going to just put it out on Amazon the way that I did before. You know, forget a publisher. That art is Andrew's art that he did for the ebook, and now he is partnering with somebody to put this stuff out because
Tantor Audio, which is an actual legit publisher, you know, audiobook publisher, that paid me money for the publishing rights to go do this. So and then I have, you know, Orbital. So yeah, I mean, I made sure that when I dove into books and stuff that I would see things through, that I would see things to completion and stuff. And sometimes that can be difficult. The book that I have coming out in September from Amazon with Thomas and Mercer, the publisher, you know, that was a book that would have been easier to give up on, but I believed in it. My agent believed in it. And then Thomas and Mercer believed in it. And now that's another series. And so, like, I would say that, you know, my rate of delivering things, I feel pretty good because I actually wrote three books. Two books already came out. Orbital came out earlier in the year, then Black Fall, and The Naturalist comes out. And then I've got lined up for next year at least Looking Glass and maybe a couple other things. So I feel like my productivity rate in there is good. But it's like, I'm going to say this and it's going to sound, it doesn't take me a long time to write a book. So I've been looking for other things to do with my time.
By the way, I know what I just did is bought Station Breaker, and now I'm downloading it right now to my iPhone.
Cool, I hope you dig it.
Station Breaker is amazing. You will really, really, really enjoy Station Breaker. But listen, I mean, again, listen what Andrew just said. I'm publishing three books this year. It'll probably be more than Andrew forgot to mention his involvement in the Predator anthology, right?
Oh yeah,
that's coming out this year. And it's like, yeah, but you want to know what? Those don't really take me all that long. And I did a lot of them last year or the year before. So what am I doing now? What am I doing now? And like, that's like, to me, that is the example. That is the bar. So, I have tried to live my life as a Mr. Pibb to Andrew Maine's Dr. Pepper, productivity level.
I mean, again, and you're doing a great job, and I think you've improved upon the formula. You know, last year was I decided to learn get to learn a programming language and learn stuff, and that's why I picked up Ruby and Rails. This year has been, let me dig into app development and delivery. Because also I'm like, you know what? Because I said what I need is, I could create a thing, conceive a thing, put it on an ebook and deliver it to people. I'm like, you know what? If programming is something I want to do, then I need to figure out how to get from start to finish. Now, years ago, I created games for like the iPhone using game kits, but I didn't really, you know, I just used kits to put them together. I didn't get any hard coding. And that's for me. I like to find things now that I can do the beginning, middle, and end and see that all the way through to delivery. I have to choose projects at that scale or else they won't get done.
That's crucial, because if there's anything that I think I've taken the most away from you, Andrew, is that life is not the one idea. Life is the 360. It's the idea, production, the massaging of the idea to get it to where it needs to be, the realization that real art is shit, right? And so how do I make this? What's the best avenue to do it? What's the best avenue to market it? How do we gauge success when it's out there? And then how do we move forward? Is this a one-off or do you keep going? And if you're not, The greatest creative trap we can have is believing that, you know, like like the idea. I love the fact that Arrested Development had, you know, Job have the line like, "Oh, I'm an idea man, Michael," to reveal that to be kind of the fraudulent phrase that it is, you know, because there is no worth to being the idea man, right? There is worth to creating. There is worth to bringing things into the world. And, you know, once you, for all anybody wants to say, oh, you tried this and it didn't work, or you tried this and it wasn't great, man, you walked that line and you got to the end of it. And now you are so much better for it than outthinking yourself from the very beginning. You know?
Yeah, the idea man thing, like, I'm trying to find a kind way to say, but yeah, that when I hear people say variations, that I'm like, that is the laziest, least I want to do anything possible sort of thing anybody can say. I just want to do the easy part of just thinking something up and then make somebody else go have somebody else go do it. It's like, okay, so you don't want to put the sweat into making it happen. Imagine if Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk were like, I'm just the idea guy. You know, Jeff Bezos, like, I got an idea for a thing called Amazon. I think it'd be really, you know, people, I had this idea. Like, what'd you do? Well, you know, a lot of people had an idea for e-commerce. Jeff Bezos made it work. You know, I had a friend tell me once, like, describing themselves, like, I think I'm kind of a lot like Elon Musk and kind of have these ideas. I'm like, no, you're nothing like him. He makes these things happen, you know, or you and I sit around at Denny's talking about these things. This guy's out there doing stuff. And that's the thing to think about is, think about what did Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and Steve Jobs all have in common, and what sets them apart from everybody else is that they became billionaires and they still did the thing they do. Jeff Bezos is on his way to be the richest man in the world, and he shows up at an office every day and he does the job that he set out for himself. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, well, Bill Gates sort of retired, but like Warren Buffett, one of the richest men on the planet, same thing. He's got a job to do. He goes and does it. He's got billions of dollars. It is really not about the money at this point. It is seriously not about the money at this point. People are like, oh, I want more. I'm like, no, is it 15 billion? Is it 17 billion? I forget. Doesn't matter. It is because they're so focused on what they're doing that the work is the thing. That's why most of us will never be rich because the first chance we get to cash out, because if that's the goal, that's what we do, not build something big and great.
Yep.
So idea men are worth 10 to 20% at best. I think you're off by a margin of 10.
Yeah, possibly 20. Like, ideas are literally free and raining around you. You want an idea? Take a cab. How about that? Then you got plenty of ideas. But what you'll get is somebody who also has a lot of reasons why he can't get around to doing his thing.
Yeah.
Beware reasons. Perfectly good reasons.
Yeah, the more creative you are, the better you are at creating them.
Hey, man, I got a pick. It's Justin's Kickstarter on Friday. Action news is this Friday. Everybody needs to buy it and do it on Friday. That's the purpose of the Kickstarter, is you kick the start.
Kickstarter.
Yeah, going for that. Well, I don't know. We had a we got a like a. I think we might have a link, but it's like it's a. It's like pro tip. We're screwing around with it, so it's not finished. But yeah, action news. The game from the folks who brought you the Contender comes. What is effectively Anchorman the game? You use real news stories to create wacky television news scripts. We're very proud of the of the mechanic for it, and everybody on this show will be receiving their demo copies within the next 2 to 3 days.
So, yeah,
we'll get all of that, and I can't say enough about how much I love the design and how proud I am of the team. It's
what I saw looked beautiful. What I saw looked great. It looked so good.
You know, it's funny now because the gender dynamics are what they are. But Brian will be able to appreciate that. It feels like now we are in the delivery stages of pregnancy, which is funny because Meg and Fawn, our design team, are women, and John and I are men, and we are like now. It's very tense, and maybe a lot of people are saying things that they don't exactly mean, but it's just we're like. Everyone wants to get it right, so when I
like this metaphor because I'm assuming that it's also you're getting every outsider giving you advice that is super not helpful, not going to be implemented. You already have a plan, you're sticking to it. You know, it's like, oh, you should give an all natural water birth. Water birth is the way to go. Have you called the water birth people? You can get a doula; they can sing a song for you.
You know, it's funny. We were talking with our friend Mikey Newman, who launched his very, very, very successful Patreon for Movies with Mikey. And he was talking about how funny it was that all anybody could give him when he was asking for advice on his Patreon was very strident, very confident advice to the point of maybe even, you know, calling names and using very harsh language when it came to some of his decisions. Which rang increasingly hollow as his Patreon made more than theirs. That birthed such amazing, strident advice for them. So it's like, it's hard. It's running this one has been as hard, if not harder, than previously. And to be honest, you know, your estimation is certainly correct. But I haven't looked for advice. To be honest, and I haven't, to the point where I haven't talked to you guys about it as much as I probably talked to you guys about the last one, you know, not because I don't value your guys' opinion. There's really no two people on the planet that I value, you know, more, but just because there's so much internal, you know, kind of deliberation.
Justin, let me tell you how to run a Kickstarter at this point.
Well, I mean, that's a very, very valid point because it's like I know I you know, when you first started this, I had theoretical knowledge. You had theoretical knowledge. Then you did it and then you got practical real knowledge of this. And I could certainly weigh in a little bit like, oh, there's a, you know, potential buyer, maybe this or this or this. But you already, and that's a problem too, is like sometimes you enter into some things and be like, oh, we've got suggestions. Like, that's great. I've got 100 things I got to get through, and yours might actually be in here and solve that problem. But it's like, yeah, let me do the thing I'm going to do. And sometimes I get a little annoying because be like, well, you know, I'm like, you see something that's not fully working. I get that, but don't treat it like I'm like, why isn't this working? You know, it's like I've got a list. Let me get through the list because right now having to manage people telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Is it something I want to put at the top of the list?
And that's the thing is I'm one of four, you know, and everybody's got an opinion inside, you know? And so now any advice that I take on the outside needs to go through, you know, the House of Representatives in my head to determine whether or not we're going to bring it to the floor of the Senate, to graduate, to be signed by the White House. That is my mouth to our own, you know, decision-making process, you know, and it's I don't know if I can mix any more metaphors into my explanation.
Bowling, throw bowling into the mix. Is there any bowling parts?
Bowling Alone, by Robert Putnam. So yeah, it's hard, you know, and we're hopefully over a bit of the hump now as we're getting, you know, through the video and everything. But the goal is to just take every lesson that we learned from the last one and turn all those up to 11 and try to maximize everything we possibly can. And that's what this week is just putting all that together and cashing in all my favors. If I ever did you a favor, then get ready for I'm sliding into all the DMs this week. It's just one after another. Hey, man, what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I'll think about it. Gentlemen, I'm just going to double down. My pick is Action News.
Yeah.
Hey, my pick is the Modern Rogue Patriot.
Ha. Yeah, the funny thing, like the only conversation we had, like I was like, oh, man, you should call it fake news. You should call it fake news. You should be called fake news. We're going to Action News. Okay. Anyhow, I mean, it was one of those, like, sometimes just somebody will have a suggestion that they seem really insistent on, they don't really care about, but there's like, oh, this would be cool. But that's
yeah,
really it.
And that, believe you me, that was something that we talked about a lot. We talked about whether to call it fake news a lot, and ultimately we kind of made that decision to go away from it.
Better than you did. Better than you did.
Yeah.
Because
I gave you horrible advice.
I mean, it was just that we didn't want it to seem political. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. and you know, because we still don't know whether or not, I mean, how much the politics thing helped and hurt us the last time, so we wanted to try to do it without it. And that wasn't the aesthetic.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.